this Yoga Sutra. Are originally in four books. But we have rearranged the sutras into five books. The book that you have with you, the first one third, is a general exposition of the sutras. The last one third is an exposition by each sutra, and the middle one third are the practices. Practices differ as individuals differ. Some prefer tapasya, some prefer japa, some prefer the Hatha Yoga practices, but these practices do not lead to transcendence. All the practices all over the world, whether it is transcendental meditation, whether it is yoga, whether it is Christian science, or whatever science, it does not lead to transcendence or illumination. Do I sound very negative? For the simple reason that you and I and the man in the street is structured in transcendence. So there is no achievement by way of transcendence or illumination. You refer for a moment page 47. Page 47. And you will find the sutra very clear. Book 4, 3. The practices and methods are not the true cause of the transference of consciousness, but they serve to remove obstacles, just as the husbandman prepares his ground for sowing. Now turn back to page 247. On page 247, you read the same sutra, but explain. There is a bias regarding practices, methods and techniques. In Zen Buddhism, it is said that each one is born with Buddha nature and there is no need for any practices. We also know that we have within us Ishvara, the Gurudeva, who can guide. But practices and methods are not the direct cause. They serve to remove the granthis and bring about the inner biological development so necessary to withstand the higher vibrations when it happens. Just as knowledge drives away ignorance, so virtue drives away vice. Yet, virtue itself cannot cause emancipation. If yoga has not been practiced during the innumerable past lives, there would indeed be an accumulation of afflictions and weaknesses. To achieve yoga by practices and methods is simply to remove these afflictions and weaknesses. The practices do not grant emancipation nor lead to illumination. They remove obstacles preventing it. In this sense, they are like a good farmer who prepares his field by removing the weeds or removing the earth block to start the water flowing into the field. So we understand before we go further that practices do not lead to transcendence nor illumination. Now, what is yoga? Yoga is balance and rhythm, yoga is sanskar or structure. Yoga is communication, inner and outer. Unless your mind is very clear on this subject, rhythm and balance in your breathing, in your thinking, in your emotions, and in your physical body. Sanskars that you are born with, that give you a particular kind of structure, beyond which you can normally not go. As the saying says, you can fly as high as your wings can carry, not more. And your wings are your structure. If you want to fly higher, the structure of your wings should be changed. And the third, the most important, communication. Today, though science has progressed so much, yet we are isolated as if in the universe because of lack of communication. There are inner communications, there are outer communications, and if these all types of communications are not established, we cannot hope to progress by an inch. How shall we bring about rhythm and balance? How shall we change our structure? How shall we establish inner and outer communication? These three steps are very vital. And to read the sutra 1,000 times or to read the Gita 1,000 times is waste of so much energy and nothing more. You must understand this way. Fortunately, Yoga Sutra go a long way to make us understand these three vital points. We do talk loosely sometimes or oftentimes about an astral body. We may call the physical body an outer body, the astral body as an inner body, but this is mere spiritual fiction as long as communication is not established between the two bodies. Once having established communication, then you know for a fact that there is an outer body and there is an inner body. This is the first step to communication. The second step to communication is that this inner man and this outer man together set up a communication with the divine fragment inside. We always say we have a soul, which is so foolish to speak. The soul possesses us. We don't have a soul. It is the soul, the vital substance that cares to have a body like this. So the next step would be the inner man and the outer man together will establish communication with divine fragment, which is a part of the divine wholeness, whether you call it Atma or Paramatma. I have introduced this word, divine fragment and divine wholeness. And if there is no communication between the two bodies, between the two bodies and the divine fragment, and the divine fragment together with these two bodies to understand what is divine wholeness, even if you are born 100,000 times again, it will serve no purpose. Further, inner man and this outer man. Patanjali in yoga says, he uses a very nice term, psychic nature. He calls it psychic nature, together, the inner man and the outer man. The outer man, which is a physical man, this outer body, the physical body, is a secondary body. The primary or the vital body is the inner body or the body of emotions, the astral body. And we are as strong or as weak as our emotions are. So, one of the most vital practice is to refine our emotions. As long as we have no control over our emotions, our minds will always be colored. Whatever decisions we'll come to will always be colored depending upon the emotions that rule us. All this is put together, all this ignorance of all this knowledge is put together into one word, avidya. Avidya is ignorance of all these facts. As long as we are ignorant of all these facts, what happens? Wrong identification. What happens? Wrong identification. We call this as I, this outer covering as I, while it is merely an outer covering. The outer covering together with the inner covering also cannot say I. Only your divine fragment can say I. Otherwise tomorrow, your clothes have a right to say I and not you, and you will not like it. So, step by step, this is our avidya. What is next? This avidya leads to the five states of mind. Not mind actually, but brain. I am repeating this, as I said, for the benefit of some new faces. We have to learn the difference between mind and brain. Brain is an organ like any other organ, the heart, the pair of lungs, the stomach, the intestine, anything. Like any other organ, the brain is an organ. And what is mind? The mind is the universal divine mind, the mind of God in the universe. If we put aside this factor, the divine mind of God, we will not be able to explain many things in the universe. This divine mind of God flows through every living or non-living substance. And wherever there is a possibility of a brain, whether it is human, whether it is animal, whether it is bird, whether it is reptile, if there is something like a brain, that it is immediately put into motion. The brain is put into motion. You may have it television set, you may have a radio. If there is no electricity, your television or your radio cannot operate, because your television or your radio is an organ and the flowing mind is the electricity for this organ. And if the flowing mind electricity does not flow through these various organs, they are dead. And so this brain would be as much dead if the divine mind of God continuously does not flow. This fact is to be understood. If not understood, it is avidya, that we are not intelligent beings. We human beings are not intelligent beings. We are rational animals in human form. We are rational animals in human form. That is what we are. If this divine mind of God does not flow, and then comes the second step, and if you cannot communicate, you are again the rational animal and nothing more. Get my point? Over the ages, for the last many thousand years, here and there one single human being has contacted this divine mind of God, and we call such beings artists, inventors, even prophets, our saints. They are those few human beings who have been in communication with this divine mind of God. And through them, over the ages, we have learned something. And this accumulated something we call knowledge. And our books are full of such knowledge. But if you put on your heart and look back from your birth till today, you have not communicated for a moment with this divine mind of God. Ganga is flowing for the last God knows how many years. People living on the banks of Ganga are fast asleep. So this divine mind of God is continuously flowing to us, and we are fast asleep. If we do not wake up, we are asleep. In yoga, when it is mentioned that you must wake up, it means only one thing, that you must be able to communicate with this mind of God. You get my point? And if you can communicate with the mind of God, what can happen? The entire Brahman is floating in the mind of God. Not only our earth or you and me, but the entire Brahman is floating in the mind of God. And if you can communicate with this mind of God, in this universe, there is nothing at any end of the universe that you cannot be aware of. This is the vital difference. Whether you will live lonely and alone, or whether you will communicate with the entire universe. If you can communicate with the mind of God, you can communicate to the limits of the universe and know what you want to know. That is the advantage, second advantage in yoga. This mind of God in English translation is normally called the infinite mind or the universal divine mind. In the sastras it is called chitti. As chitti, the divine mind of God, it flows to every brain organ on this earth. Either we uplift ourselves to that level, or we can, as human beings, as we pollute so many things, can pollute that divine mind and make a stupid mind of ours, the individual mind. And therefore the sastras call it the individual mind as chitta. Understand? So, we are normally content with chitta. and have no desire to communicate with Chitti. If you understand me intellectually, it is spiritual fiction. I repeat again, if you understand me intellectually, it is spiritual fiction. Unless you practice, unless you experience, we are no wiser than a newborn baby, with all the books we may read under the sun. So, this is the beginning of Yoga Sutra. In Yoga Sutra, it is stated that this brain organ of ours can remain in five states. It can have correct knowledge, it can have incorrect knowledge, it may have fancy, or daydreaming, or night dreaming. It may sleep. These are the various states of our organ, the brain. And depending on the state of the organ called brain will be the possibility of communication with infinite mind of God. God, we say, is He. In a big council of women, they decided that God will be called she and not he. So, if you deal with she and he, you will not know anything about the mind of God. So please remember, there is no figure to which you can put your mind and brain and say, this is God. And that is why in the Buddhist literature they mention that if you come across a Buddha, kill him. Because the minute your mind says, he is Buddha, he is saint, you don't understand. Because a Buddha or a saint, you will not be able to see. And if you are able to see, he is useless. So this is what Patanjali begins his Yoga Sutra with, this simple understanding. So if your mind is clear on this groundwork of Patanjali, we can proceed further. Unfortunately, we have covered some portion. So I will today continue from where we had stopped last month. Where did we stop? Let us start on book 255. As a result of these means, there follows the complete subjugation of the sense organs. Earlier it says on page 233 and 232, we shall cover a little of this. When right posture, page 232, when right posture, Patanjali does not talk about physical posture. Patanjali only talks about the posture of the mind. So, when he writes, when right posture has been attained, there follows right control of prana and proper inspiration and expiration of breath. On page 233, 250 reads, right control of prana, or the life force, is external, or motionless. It is subject to place, time and number, and is also protected or breathed. From there, we come here page 234, when it states, as a result of these means, there follows the complete subjugation of the sense organs. What does it mean? Having proceeded thus far, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana are to be practiced under the guidance of Ishvara, the Gurudeva, and internal peace is now assured. Why do we say this? For the simple reason that dharana or dhyana is not possible without a guru. And when I talk about guru, I don't mean dime a dozen gurus that they come across everywhere. I am talking about your internal divine fragment as your own guru and nobody else. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi are steps to be learned at the feet of the divine fragment within you. And when will you learn these steps at the feet of your divine fragment? When you will be able to call upon your divine fragment, and the divine fragment will take the form of a guru to teach you. There is no other way. All external gurus are useless. That is why I never allow any of you friends to call me a guru, because I am not. The only guru is your divine fragment within you. And the day you will learn to call upon your divine fragment, Ishvara, that day he will take an outer form before your very eyes. And do not make another silly mistake of calling it darshan. There is no darshan to any pair of eyes given in all eternity. I speak again. There is no darshan given to any pair of human eyes in all eternity. All darshans are hallucinations. All darshans are hallucinations. Why? Because your guru or God or God incarnate, whatever you might call, has no form, has no color, has no texture, has no feeling that you can touch and see. So whatever you are seeing is the hallucination of your mind. If you have a particular form in your mind, that form will give you darshan. That means it's your own imagination that is giving you darshan and not an external force. So please try to come out of all these superstitions. Unless you are bold enough to put aside everything, including churches, mosques, temples, whatever they are, put them aside. God is not there. God is within you. And you are the temple. And try to be that beautiful temple you can be. Call upon the God that is sitting quietly in you and see who is the Guru. And the beauty is, your guru will not be different from my guru, because all the divine fragments are same, part of the same divine wholeness. And there will be never a talk of you and me and I and thee, because you will understand that my guru is as good as yours and your guru is as good as mine. There will be no gospels to read, there will be no temples to go, there will be no idols to worship. The whole world is worshipping idols, whether they are made of stone, or cross, or Kaaba, or fire, they are all idols. and one idol is as bad as another. If you are convinced that idols will lead you, by all means carry on. After 10 million years, when you get tired, come back. I'll speak the same words. I won't change. So this is basically the thought that Patanjali wants to put across. This is very vital. Otherwise, you will go in the same circles that you have been going, referring to 1001 books that you may have read. I hope I am not hurting your feelings, but this is vital. As I said, if you can bring about communication through your brain and through the divine mind that's close to your brain, you don't require morality or a big sermon on morals. Thou shalt not do this and thou shalt not do that. In that case, the 11th you know the 11th commandment? Thou shalt not obey this commandment. So don't go by this. You will close your mind. It's all right for humanity that is primitive at one time, for a young humanity, for an infant humanity, all this is good. The threat of Moses was required before the love of Christ. And today, we require nothing. We require communication with the mind of God, nothing else. We are a growing humanity. And what was good in our Montessori classes is not good for us in middle school. We can't go beyond this, you see. So let us open our minds now and not be anchored in the same old ideas. The human brain, perhaps in the universe, it's the finest creation of God and nature. By itself, it is useless, dead, incapable. When in communication, there is nothing like it. When Newton was dead, his brain was preserved. And an idiot's brain was also preserved, and a lot of study was done on both the brains. One day, after the professors and scientists had gone, the assistant had placed the wrong brains in the wrong boxes. And the next day, when they continued the research, they found no difference. So a brain by itself is a mass of matter, nothing else. But it is structured wonderfully. A TV set is structured beautifully. By itself it may be dead, but in communication it is alive. It is wonderful. And like that, if your brain could be in communication, there is nothing in the wide universe equal to it. Now, when we want to be in communication with this infinite mind of God, why is it that we are not able to communicate, even if we want to communicate? And that is what Patanjali calls obstacle, lethargy of the body and mind. We want to do it. It's a mere wish. We don't go beyond this mere wish. Every day we want to do it. every day we don't do it. Lethargy of body and mind. We do not want to communicate. Then comes the stage when you are very firm in your mind and say, I will communicate. At that time what happens? At that time a very big obstacle comes in your way. Your own sanskar. Your own sanskar. Your old sanskar will pull you back to what it is made of. You have now decided to make progress. That's a new thought. But the hundreds of your old thoughts do not want you to do that. So your own thoughts, your own path, your own structure, your own sanskar then stand in front of you like a wall. I don't want it, it says. And then the struggle of the disciple begins. He wants, he fails, he wants, he fails. And it's a sad story over years and years and lives and lives. If you see those diagrams of the brain and mind in the book, you will see that the first diagram shows a man that does not want to do anything. The second diagram shows he wants to do, he cannot do. And over God knows how many lifetimes he comes to a third step, he wants to do and he can do a little. And that is the beginning of a spiritual journey. That is what I call the point in time. Unless that point in time comes in your life, whether in this life or next, you cannot take this third step. You will still continue to want to do and not be able to do, to want to do and not to be able to do, that will continue. But when you will reach that point in time, you will want to do and you will be able to do. And that is your first step then on the path. Till then, you think you are on the path. You are not even in the subways. I don't want to discourage you, but our minds must be clear. I've seen people carry on with that japa. I have seen people praying. I pity them. For the minds are not in prayers nor in japa. Because they have not yet reached the point in time. They want to do, the brain goes somewhere, dreaming. And that is why Patanjali says, when you are sleeping, you are dreaming. When you are awake, you are daydreaming. So when are you awake? You can be awake once you reach the point in time. This point in time you know, science says that the point has no definition. And so I think it cannot be located then, this point in time. So as you will go nearer, it will go farther. As you go nearer, it will go farther. You will be seeking and it will be running away from you. The point in time. Why? Why does it happen that way? It is a sure test of your sincerity. It is a sure test of your sincerity. When you are doing
your will to do is so hot, so white hot, that you don't care for your sleep, you don't care for your food, you don't care for anything. When that white hot heat burns in you, to catch that point in time, you will be able to catch it. No warm-hearted aspiration will do. If you come and tell me I am doing three-step rhythmic breathing, it's not enough. That burning aspiration, when you forget the world, going to school so many times, I used to buy chana, used to put the outer skin into my mouth and throw the gram away. And instead of going to Grandore or wherever I was supposed to go, I will go to Kolaba all the time, not being here. If you can forget yourself totally and not know what you are doing on the physical world, that is the beginning of reaching the point in time. Red hot irons should be very cool before your aspirations. Red hot iron is not able to burn your aspirations. Your aspirations should be able to go through and through red hot irons. Unless this state is created. Have you ever been in a plane? Most of you must have been in a plane, isn't it? Have you observed? Before the flight begins, the engines are booed to the maximum before the takeoff. You see? That testing you must do first before your takeoff. Otherwise, you cannot take off on in this path, no. Because your planes fly 10, 12, 15,000 kilometers. This path is a few billion light years. And your spaceship must be able to build up speeds faster than light. This should be your basic grounding. This is the minimum that the sutras expect from you. Nelson expected only duty. England expects every man to do his duty. Here much more is expected on the path. So if you are sincerely not able to give all this, there will be no progress. And what will happen? You will go from speaker to speaker, from teacher to teacher, from books to books, unless you have seen all of them and read all of them, but understood nothing, finally. That is a sorry state. If Brahma is not prevented from the path, Einstein has no right to be on the path. Something else is required here, not the book knowledge, not all that you have heard and remembered, because that is memory. And on this path, you have to leave memory behind. On this path, later on, you have to leave your mind behind. I don't mean to say you will become mindless, but when a time comes that you can communicate with the divine mind of God, your own mind is not required. Your own mind then becomes an obstacle. And whatever you learn comes direct inside. There is no second stage of brain or mind. That which is learned by the brain and mind is forgotten by the brain and mind. That which pours into you direct